Good evening, everyone, on this Earth Day 2011. I'm George Knapp, and for my friend George Norrie this evening, we're talking about cold fusion with media ecologist James Martinez. Been talking about it for about 45 minutes, and I don't know about you, but I still don't know how this works. I'm going to take one more stab at that with James and see if he can explain why the world should believe it's coming. I also want to ask him about who's doing the research, because what I had read was that the U.S. Navy is now looking at it, that Stanford Research Institute is now looking at it, and not surprisingly, the governments of China, Russia, and Japan are looking at it, as well as Italian scientists. We'll get into that and more and open up the phone lines right after this on Coast to Coast AM. James Martinez, before we go to the phones, I'm going to take one more crack at this. I read a quote today online in preparing for the interview that said, you've got a gallon of seawater and a gallon of gasoline. There is 10 times as much potential energy in that gallon of seawater using cold fusion as there is in gasoline. What I don't understand is how you get the energy out of it. You said you described this as a tabletop mechanism, something that would fit in your kitchen, but I still don't understand how it is supposed to work. So can you take one more crack at that before we open the phone lines?
You're like me. Yeah. So I understand exactly how you feel, because as a non-scientist, I've asked the same questions over and over again, and I'll be honest with you. I had very little time to prepare for this. I was called by producers today. And
yeah, I understand. We appreciate you being here.
Give me a scientist, and I'm like, these guys, I didn't have much time, because I was going to get Ed Stormer, one of these guys, to come on and actually explain that and kind of give you the latest.
Oh, okay. Well, just tell me, what's on my tabletop? You know, is it water? Is that what we're using? And
water,
we plug some electricity into it?
Water and palladium.
Okay.
And what happens, basically, from my limited scientific knowledge, is that energy is inserted into a cathode tube. A less amount of energy, obviously, that comes out of it, that extends out of it. It goes and through a process through palladium, and from when it ignites and does something with the palladium, more energy comes out than initially went into it. That's about as simple as for the novice. That's about as simple as I can explain it. But for those people that are, you know, listening now with curious ears, the coldfusionnow.org website has got loads of information, including all the interviews I've done and including all the explanations and some video and all sorts of stuff is there that explains it in detail. But it's all done in kind of scientific lingo as well, so keep that in mind.
Okay. You had mentioned earlier in our interview that the Department of Energy had sort of been dragging its feet, and I had read about these two reports they put out just basically poo-pooing the whole thing. But someone else in the U.S. government is very interested, and that's the U.S. Navy, right?
Yeah, I called those guys, and I talked to them over the phone, and I said, listen, you know, it's okay now. You guys can come out and talk. I mean, they had the 60 Minutes piece, and I talked to their director of public affairs down in San Diego, and they weren't quite ready to come talk on the radio about it. I don't know why, but they were said, well, when it's time, we'll come out and we will call you and let you know. And as far as I'm concerned, that was news in itself, but they were not exactly, knocking down my door to come talk about it.
You mentioned 60 Minutes. Now, they did a big piece on it, but was it 2009, late 2009? Did that change sort of the playing field? Did that say, okay?
Oh,
I mean,
totally.
Did it really say it's okay to come out and talk about it?
Totally. Totally. That was, from what I heard, I watched it, and then I found out that that was one of the most downloaded replays of 60 Minutes programs ever. And then right after that, they took the thing down. They took it down, and I'm like, what? Wait a minute. You aired this. You put together the story for a year. You air it as one of the biggest stories ever, period. And then when I started talking about it on the radio, they took the thing down. And, of course, some people saved it into their hard drives, and it started showing up all over the place. But that was pivotal to changing people's attitudes about it, because they did a good balanced piece with it, I might add. It wasn't totally okay, we're here and everything's great. They did talk to other people that were still type kind of discrediting it. So it was not like a totally positive piece on it. They definitely let the observer viewer decide for themselves, but it leaned in the right direction. It was a very positive piece, and it definitely changed the entire attitude having to do with that subject matter.
Yeah, basically pointed out that the reports of Cold Fusion's death are greatly exaggerated. And although the video was not available online when I looked today, the script is still there that people can get all the information. We're going to go to the phone lines east of the Rockies, Milo in New York. Hi, Milo.
Good evening. I have a BS in physics, and I've wondered about Cold Fusion for a number of years. I have to say I'm not up on the latest. What I've done is reviewed with the initial beginnings of Cold Fusion and was absolutely astonished by what I saw. In my opinion, the researchers were lucky that they didn't blow themselves up. quite honestly, the way that it seems to work is atomic particles do not just get harder and harder to get pushed together as you get closer and closer. There's something called what they decided to call the weak force, because scientists in the mid-20th century discovered that electrons, as you push them closer and closer together, don't go up to an infinite amount of energy. The Coulomb force begins to tail off as you get closer and closer, meaning you can push particles together. If you push them hard enough, all of a sudden they sort of pop together, and then the weak force, or with nuclear particles, the strong force, plays an effect and actually pulls them back together. So if you can get through the Coulomb barrier, you can have fusion occurring at lower temperatures than what you would expect. And here's what happens. I read an experiment that was done with not palladium, but its equivalent in the atomic its equivalent on another series on the
periodic chart.
Periodic chart. Thank you. Which is
nickel.
Not nickel, but the precious metal, let's see, silver, gold, and
platinum?
Platinum. Platinum. If you take a block of platinum and you soak it in hydrogen, then you heat it, the hydrogen begins to go out of the platinum. If you're dealing with palladium, the same thing is going to happen. So my feeling, this is what I think happened, is that the palladium was soaked in heavy hydrogen. As electricity was introduced into the chemical chemistry there, the palladium began to heat up, began to push hydrogen out. Well, if you are pushing hydrogen out in all directions internally, it's pushing the hydrogen atoms together at the same time. So the tremendous, tremendous forces were generated within the chemical, within the crystal compound, and actually worked like a gigantic nutcracker and pushed the atoms together.
Well, Milo, let me ask you this then, Milo, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, but why would it not work the same all the time?
Well, I'm about to get there.
Okay.
If the reaction had worked correctly, they would have blown themselves to smithereens. But unfortunately, they didn't spin stabilize it by using new magnetic fields. Because, like in an MRI, you are actually taking particular nuclei and spinning them. You are lining them up and spinning them. If that isn't done, if you don't find a way to spin stabilize it, you're going to have the nuclear reaction continuing. It's going to continue, and you're going to go beyond hydrogen. You're going to get lithium, and you're going to get heavier and heavier elements. Very quickly, if your reaction works correctly, you're going to poison your crystal lattice. And by poisoning your crystal lattice, several things happen. First of all, if it happens fast enough, you can have an explosion, as I believe one reference mentioned an explosion in a government laboratory, and they said that they then shut down the entire experiment. That I would expect, because they hadn't been stabilized the process to only get hydrogen to helium. The next thing that happens is that as you poison the crystals, you're going to get, it's not going to work again the second time or the third time. As a matter of fact, it may not work the first time. If you poison it quickly enough, it may not work properly. It's going to be an extremely unstable, unrepeatable experiment. My feeling is, if I was going to build a machine like this, I would start with platinum. I would use a known controlled crystal. I would actually have to know exactly how the crystal is made and aligned, and I would have to stabilize the entire structure using a very strong magnetic field, an MRI field in effect. It would be a device that would have to be larger than a food processor, that's for certain. It would be a fairly large machine, still could fit into your kitchen, but it wouldn't be that small, because you've got to control your reaction, because you don't want it to go to lithium. You want it to the reaction to stay with hydrogen and going to helium, bleed off your atoms. The men who made the original experiments with cold fusion, it was said that they had announced it early. I think that they did. They were chemists. They didn't have a clue what they were doing on the subatomic level, and that's part of why they got criticized so heavily. Unfortunately, it's poisoned the whole field of cold fusion. But there's one more thing, and this is pure speculation. If cold fusion occurs at room temperature in the crystalline structures, that also means that cold fusion, in effect, could be occurring in the atomic, the deep layers of stars. That would mean that, and this is where it really gets wild, that could mean possibly that the iron that we see poisoning our sun is actually coming from cold fusion-style processes occurring in the sun, and the sun could be a lot younger than what scientists claim that they are. So I'm just mentioning that could be happening elsewhere. Anyways, that's what I have to say.
That was great, Milo. Really appreciate it. See, James, you can learn all kinds of stuff listening
that's
to
right.
Coast to Coast. Here's one of the things that I had read as a criticism, and it seems perfectly legitimate to me to ask this question by the critics, is that the measurements of the amount of energy going in to the experiment may not be accurate, and that's why the amount that's coming out and being measured is greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, there actually, here's one of the things that in more important interviews I did regarding this subject matter, which was with Robert Duncan. He was in the 60 Minutes piece. He was the guy brought in to essentially measure the measuring stick, and I interviewed him regarding what at that time were the experiments that were going on in Israel regarding cold fusion. And he was the guy chosen. He's vice chancellor of research at University of Missouri. And he was brought in to actually measure those things. And after careful reviewing and consideration of all the details, he found out that the readings were accurate. And there was actually, more energy coming out than the energy going in. So
okay. Well, that, you know what? When I read that criticism, I thought, well, I can understand that. That might happen, but it sure seems like something that would be pretty easy to fix. Milo in Poughkeepsie, thanks for that call. We're going west of the Rockies. David in Anchorage. Hi, David.
Hi, yeah. Have you heard of Frank Zendarsik's work in the math behind why cold fusion works?
I have not. James?
I have, but I have not done a lot of independent research on that particular guy.
What can you tell us, David?
It seems pretty credible to me, and it's not too different than the last caller, except for one aspect of it, and that's that when you have electromagnetism, you can have a coil of wire, and there's a certain magnetic field there, and all you do is you add a nail to it. And then with that nail, you get a much stronger magnetic field, even though you didn't change the electricity. And so there's a similar thing to that happening with all of the forces. And there's this thing that takes place called the speed of transition, where an atom is jumping from one level, or I should say an electron within an atom is jumping from one level to another as it absorbs light. This is why light helps cold fusion so well. And as that transition takes place, what happens is all of the forces within an atom for that zillionth of a second have a magnetic component to them, which is very powerful. And so what happens is as the hydrogen is in this palladium lattice, these hydrogens, deuteriums in actuality, they're hydrogen with an extra neutron. And so as they're in this lattice, they don't have any place to go. And as they go through that transition, they think they're the same atom, because the strong force enlarges a component of the strong force, not the actual strong force. It's like the mirror component of it gets bigger than both of the atoms, and then the atoms pull together in fusion. This is why it's really so easy to do. There's lots and lots of different kinds of ways to do fusion, not just these two, the one that you have in the Tokamak reactor and cold fusion. There's other kinds of fusion that are really easy to do too, but cold fusion is one of them, which is really a fairly simple process.
And so are you on among those who would say that if you're not necessarily a proponent, but at least think that there is great potential there, that it's not it's too soon to say cold fusion's dead?
I've got to say this, that cold fusion, the only thing wrong with cold fusion is you need a precious metal to do it. And there's other kinds of fusions you can do out there with basically no more exotic metals than are common in everyday household appliances. Let's just put it that way. That are there's other types of energy too that you don't even have to go to fusion, where you can just pull energy directly out of the quantum vacuum. But you know, you gotta take it with whatever they will allow us to do. And if they'll let us do cold fusion, let's do it. Good.
David, really appreciate the call, David. Excellent insight. James, anything to add to that?
I know, I agree with it. I'm glad these callers are coming up and talking about this, because that's the entire point. The whole point of this is to get the public more involved, start talking about this, investigating it for themselves. Absolutely.
We got a pretty bright audience at times. Thank you for that call, David. First-time caller Rick in Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Rick.
Yes, I've just been listening to Milo and David, and they're absolutely brilliant. I cannot match them, but the only thing... in my own experience, I've been a mechanic since the late 1970s. I've watched cars go from the gasoline internal combustion engine, magneto, spark plugs, that sort of thing, very simplistic, to having this overcomplicated, you know, three-computer, you know, fuel management systems and anti-lock brake systems and everything like that. How many times, or how much more can we overcomplicate the internal combustion engine, and why is it that the scientists want to resist just, when you really think about cold fusion, I mean, according to Milo and David, I mean, this is really still elementary. It's just a step above, a pretty big step above the internal combustion engine, whether it be gas or diesel.
So what you're saying is you can take an idea, no matter how simple it sounds, and screw it up.
Well, no. What I'm saying is how many times do we have to overcomplicate the simplistic when it comes to the internal combustion engine? I mean, why is it that the scientists resist something like cold fusion? We're not talking about anti-gravity propulsion here. We're not talking about intergalactic travel. We're talking about something a simple step above the internal combustion engine.
Well, James, you can address that.
Is that
part of the reason? Is this too simple? It's too simple to be any good?
I can tell you this. I'm based upon all the people that I've interviewed, scientists that were initially skeptics and now believers. It offends the labyrinth of their mind and all the training and schooling that they've had. It's pure cognitive dissonance and disbelief from the very beginning. And a lot of scientists, you know, after all the social conditioning of school and what society says is you can and cannot do, when something like this is placed before them, it causes major disruption. And as, you know, previously, historically, we've seen, based on the film footage, when Hans of Leichmann came out, people got angry with them. There were death threats. There was greed. There was people trying to, you know, all the low kind of reactions to something that should be, wait a minute, let's look at this closer and, you know, let's examine this.
Okay. Our conversation with James Martinez, your calls about cold fusion continue. Eric Burden and the Animals, who are playing here in Las Vegas tonight, still cranking it out. Take us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with James Martinez, a media ecologist, about cold fusion and its potential for our planet. A lot of folks on the phones right now. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after this break on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us. I'm George Knapp, and tonight for my friend and colleague George Norrie, who has the night off, we're talking with James Martinez about the potential of cold fusion. And James, I was told by one of our alert listeners that Andrea Rossi was on the show with George Norrie about a month ago to talk about it. She's one of the biggies, right?
Yeah, he's the guy.
He is. I guess he.
Yeah, Andrea Rossi is the gentleman that's going to be doing the demonstration in Florida. He is right now the main guy of cold fusion. He shocked everybody in India after his findings, which basically, from what I'm told from Dr. Storm, he stumbled upon literally by accident a way of being able to fire up this cold fusion unit on command and repeat it over and over again. And when I initially interviewed Dr. Ed Storm about this, he explained it to me and told me, I mean, it was a very kind of historical moment for, you know, for me, as well as talking to him on the air as they were filming this, because they were filming this documentary. I was interviewing him on the air regarding that. And he said, no, this guy, it's for real. This Andrea Rossi is the gentleman that has got broken through new ground. So he is going to be a big figurehead and forever.
Going back to the phones, wildcard line, Robert in Hollywood. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Yeah, James, you must be stopped. You only fossil fuel. We need only for no coal fusion, fossil fuel. That's it, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. No, We're all in agreement, Robert.
No, no. I'm paraphrasing the Saudis. Listen, I want to ask you a quick question. Just a couple of things. How much is a gas? How much is a gallon of gasoline in Saudi Arabia?
You know, I have no idea what it costs in Saudi Arabia right now.
Do you know, Robert?
No, I'm pretty sure it's not what it is here.
Yeah, I think that's a safe guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because, see, this is that you were right at the beginning of the show. There is a conspiracy. And I'll tell you where the conspiracy started, okay? And this is a bit of history for the American people who are so dumb but don't understand how the government is in the pocket of the oil companies. Rockefeller, in 1907 or 1913, somewhere back then, decided he bribed the entire Congress and made the Congress write the laws all in his favor and stopped Ford Motor Company, who was already experimenting, like you said, with alcohol, water, gasoline, air. I mean, they were already doing that. And Rockefeller said, no, my gasoline, Standard Oil, is the only way to go, only gasoline, and you will only build carburetors that will support gasoline. Okay, so this has been going on for 100 years, and the government is paid by the oil companies, and they're all douchebags. Okay, we should take those people and turn them, the politicians in Washington, and turn them into fossil fuel. And I will put that in my car gladly, my friend. Okay.
I don't know what kind of mileage we'd get with politician fossil fuel, but they're full of gas, so it's probably be pretty good.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, thank you for the entertaining call there, Robert. James, anything to add to that?
No, he's correct. I would agree with him, and I know for certain that there is a conspiracy against the future. Just merely, I mean, I cover cold fusion primarily, but there's a lot of other inventors, you know, from the guy who invented the water car to God knows how many other inventors that have come forward with inventions that are game changers for, you know, big corporations and a lot of people that have technologies that exist that would be obsolesced by these new inventions that would take over. And a lot of people don't like that. They want to keep us kind of in this old, obsolete technological environments that we live in right now, which are obsolete when really it's time at this stage of evolution for humans all over the planet to graduate to the next level.
Well, I can't wait to hear more about Dr. Rossi and the presentation going to be made in Florida, I guess, in the near future. Next on the wildcard line, Bob in Orlando, Florida. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hello there. I have a question for you, but I was going to say is man suppresses man's own innovation. And a key example is when I was in high school back in the 70s, I knew a guy whose father was a chemist. He created a battery, a car battery that would never die, ever die. It just would never die. You know, you could discharge it, come back 8 hours later, and be charged again. He was bought out. His patent was bought out by Exide Battery, who makes the Delco batteries, and you'll never see it again. It just sits there on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And I told a friend of mine of this. I said, we need to go in the patent office, find the patent, manufacture the battery for ourselves. The individuality clause applies. You can do it for yourself. You can't manufacture it on a profitable, you know, that is to sell it because of the patent. Because Exide keeps renewing the patent to start with. But he said, oh, no, we can't do that. It would change the world. I said, so what? So what? You know how many batteries are out there? It's not going to change the world that much.
Have you ever run a search for it in the patent office online?
Yeah. And I can build a battery. I mean, from what you're describing as cold fusion, it sounds like a giant battery. It functions in the same principle as a battery.
Right, so there you understand innovation of new technology is problematic for previous technological environments, and there's where greed and money and ownership and all these other issues come into play, and basically it's the public that suffers because the planet for that matter.
Where's Rossi doing his thing down here in Florida? Because I'd love to go.
I don't know where it's located in Florida. I wasn't given the town. I talked to Ed Storm about it, and I asked him, so, you know, are you invited? And he goes, at that time, he was not invited. That could have changed by now. But
it's not open to the public, right?
No.
I'll sneak in. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, Bob, if we find out, we'll send you more information. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Right.
Alice in Illinois on the wild card line. Hi, Alice.
I haven't spoken here since I spoke to Art Bell a very long time ago.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Finally got through. I'm not a scientist, just an LLB and AB from 61 and 23 years of practice, but I married an electrical engineer with DPQ and all the high math, and I'm rereading Atlas Shrugged because the movie came out by Ayn Rand, and this sounds exactly like the super energy motor that the great John Galt, the protagonist of this 1,168-page book, invented and caused the whole world to change. The original title was The Strike, and it's not any coincidence, I don't think, that she wrote The Fountainhead in 43, and I just, while I was waiting here, went to the introduction. Her first notes on Atlas Shrugged were 1946, all after the atomic stuff was blowing up. She was such a Cassandra in predicting this kind of energy, the super energy of the motor that, you know, changed the world. But she caused, I mean, she this John Galt had the whole world, all the innovators were being squelched, you know, by the powers that be in every kind of industry, and they all went on strike and had this little community where the last one to join them was the Dagny, the, you know, super tycoon rather of the railroad, and she was only the younger sister of the one who actually ran it, so she was the rebel. But it just sounds like that super energy in there somehow.
Most definitely.
Hey, Alice, I want to ask you, have you seen the movie yet?
No, that's why I had to reread the book first, and he doesn't even show up till page 700, and I'm on about page 1,000 now. It's here in town. It's here now in the area in northern Illinois.
Well, I'm hearing wildly divergent reviews of that movie, some people who love it and think it's very important, and other people who think it's just dreadful.
Oh, well, whatever it is, I didn't want to see it without reading the book again.
Understood.
I had read it so long ago, but it's very good. And,
well, thank you for the call, okay. Alice. Appreciate it. And James, of course, that's a common theme in the research that you're doing and the scientists you talk to.
Yeah, most definitely. Absolutely.
All right. Wild card, Ruby in Eureka, California. Hi, Ruby.
Hi. How you doing?
Okay.
Well, I actually know James. I'm the webmaster for Cold Fusion Now.
Oh.
And I wanted to call in and ask James about the documentary, The Believers. Is there any word on when that's coming out?
No. Oh, hey, Ruby. Good to hear you. Last time I talked to the director, they're in post-production now. They wanted to submit it to the film festivals and all that stuff, but I presume they're pretty close to having it finished, at which time, when they do present it to the film festivals and whatnot, I mean, the timing couldn't be more perfect, you know, after Rossi's come to the playing field, so to speak. So I'm anxiously awaiting for that to come out.
Yeah, me too. And, yeah, the Rossi demonstration should be happening in October in South Florida, where he has a factory where he supposedly is creating these smaller cold fusion hot water reactors, and he's going to put them all together into 1 megawatt unit that he says he's going to put in a factory in Athens, Greece, by the end of this year. So the first commercial application going to be tested in a factory setting first to ensure the safety of the device. And then he also has claimed that there is a contract with a second group of investors in the U.S. who want to create some energy plants and sell the energy. So that was a new little tidbit of information that he's released.
Well, it'd be nice to think that the U.S., some U.S. investors would get a piece of this, that that we would have some kind of a input into it.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, U.S. investors have a chance. There's a number of companies that are also working on very similar devices, devices that don't have to use the expensive palladium, but also use the much cheaper nickel, and devices that just can take water. So a very inexpensive fuel and an inexpensive metal to be host to this reaction. It's going to make for some very economical energy sources for the public.
Hey, and Ruby, you don't happen to know where in Florida the test is going to be. Our friend Bob wants to try to slip in.
Well, you know, we'd all like to check out the scene. You know, Rossi has had to be very secretive because there isn't the kind of attention given by the patent office to these patents. In fact, the patent office has practically banned anything to do with cold fusion. So what they're trying to do is wait until they get these patents. Now, he's not waiting to sell these. If he doesn't get the patents, presumably he's going to be selling these, and people are going to be able to just find out for themselves how does this work and re-engineer devices. But you know, the problem with private investment is that they want money back. And so without patents and without that kind of protection for investors, they haven't been on board.
Hey, but, Ruby, I had asked James about this earlier. You're saying that the patent office wants nothing to do with it. What does that mean? Meaning they won't process applications?
Yeah, the patent office is working off of an obsolete report put out in 2004 by the Department of Energy, which was a little ambivalent on the relevance or the what cold fusion was. And so the patent department, the patent, U.S. Patent Office, is not... they claim that cold fusion is not an actual reaction, that it doesn't really exist. And so they're clearly behind the times. There's 20 years of science behind this. And because they won't issue patents, it's really been a problem for U.S. inventors, U.S. startup companies, and U.S. investors. And if you've followed Gerald Celente, as I know James does, we had heard Gerald Celente talk about this is the greatest investment opportunity of the 21st century. Whoever gets this device out is going to be the richest person on the planet.
Yep.
Notwithstanding whoever's the richest person right now, mm-hmm. we're talking hundreds of trillions of dollars. And so it's a tremendous opportunity, and I do hope U.S. investors step up to the plate and start supporting this ultra-clean nuclear power that uses a fuel of water.
Ruby, thank you very much for the call. James, I had read today that scientists in China, Russia, Italy, and Japan are involved in this. Somebody told me, though, the Japanese had dropped out, that they didn't think that it had that much potential. Do you have any idea where these different countries stand in their research?
Well, based upon what I've talked in private conversations, the Japanese were very involved. I think that's changed right now, abruptly changed, based upon what's happened in Japan. But from when I was talking to Ed Storm initially, when I started interviewing scientists, he said that they were heavily involved for quite some time. And that position may have changed because the whole country's changed now. But you heard it right there from Ruby. I got to tell you, this is somebody from the public that has propped this up, which was the whole point of it. She has put together that entire website. All the people associated with it, everything has been done by her. I wanted the public to step up to the plate and react to the situation. And she's done a great job with this, so kudos to her.
Back to the phone lines, east of the Rockies, Wayne in Halifax, Pennsylvania. Hi, Wayne. He's gone. Wayne is on the west line, Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Wayne.
Good evening, gentlemen. Yeah, there's two cold fusion devices that have been patented for over 50 years. Well, one is and if you're a viewer, so we Google this, the Noble Gas Engine Patent. Is one of them, and that's probably the most exciting one because it just takes noble gases like xenon, krypton, neon, that type of thing, and in a converted internal combustion engine that's sealed up, kind of like what a air conditioner works like, a totally sealed system, and passes the gases back and forth, excites the gases in the cylinders with the electrical coils around the cylinders, and a spark will ignite it. And so being sealed, there's no exhaust. It just passes the gases back and forth between the cylinders. Any high-quality, experienced mechanic that has some electronic knowledge can convert an internal combustion engine to run on this. And I'm sure you can view it on YouTube, too. I'm sure there are YouTubes and DVDs on how to do this.
Hey, Wayne, we're running out of time here. We're almost done. But can you tell me this gas, the one that was patented like 50 years ago, it works then? Does it do the same thing that James is talking about?
Works.
Hello?
Yes, it does.
Wow. Well, I'll have to look into that myself.
Send us an email, and I'll pass it along to James. Send me an email coast to coast. I really appreciate that.
All right. Great.
All right. Thank you for the calls. Thanks to all the callers. James, you got about a minute left here. Anything else to add? Things that you want the audience to understand about cold fusion?
Well, more importantly, if they don't understand it, it's time that they start investigating it themselves. This is probably the transitioning point for the entire human race, and it's really going to be the public that is going to bring this forth. So you've got to support these scientists. You've got to start talking about it in your schools. You've got to start exchanging information. If you really want to take your power back, this is one of the things that needs to be done for everybody.
All right.
Because everybody
All right.
wins.
Thanks for joining us on short notice. Happy Earth Day to you. And we have links to your website on the Coast to Coast website if people want to go there for more information. Open lines coming up in a couple of minutes. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM.